Hello and a warm welcome to Mark Rangdon's Bets Club, your one-stop shop for football betting insight. The festive period is here. It's busy. Jack Reeve and Mark Rangdon to try and guide you through to the best of our abilities. Mark will be running through the Premier League fixtures. Dan Childs joining us to preview the EFL docket and, of course, European football to look back on as well. Mark, we'll start there and we'll start with Newcastle. And, you know, after such a promising kind of start, and there were bright moments, to finish bottom of the Champions League group was somewhat of a going out with a bit of a whimper.
Yeah, disappointing. No doubt about that from, you know, Newcastle's point of view. I mean, will have been even more annoying because the result in Dortmund had gone their way and, you know, Paris hadn't won. And so, you know, the option was, you know, it was open for them. I mean, whether PSG would have played differently had they known Newcastle were winning, you know, you'll never know. But it was disappointing. I think there'll be some frustration from Eddie Howe. Obviously, over that penalty decision in Paris as well, that really hurt them. I tend not to kind of go, you know, just for one sort of, you know, officiating call as to why sort of you qualify or don't qualify. But it was a pivotal moment, and the injuries just stacked up in the end, and you know, that was a problem for them, and a suspension to Tonali as well. It was a difficult group. But I still think it's one that Newcastle had the potential to get out of, and the way that they'd started the group in terms of, you know, winning that Paris Saint-Germain game at home. I think it was away from home that they really didn't put it together, because away to Milan, they were poor. They got the draw, but they were really bad. Didn't think they were that much better in Dortmund either when they lost there. And despite the unlucky nature of that late and controversial PSG goal, I mean, they were pummeled in Paris for about 100 minutes. So, they weren't able to kind of play, I think, the way that they would have wanted to away from home at times. And then the group ran away from them in that Dortmund doubleheader, really. That's where things went wrong. And yeah, there were no excuses really for losing to Dortmund at home. I think was a key match in the whole group for them. And to miss out on Europe altogether, I think some teams, I think, it's not that much of a big deal. You know, the Europa League isn't and doesn't have to be that important really to a season. But I think for Newcastle, it would have been, you know, a good opportunity to win a trophy and to really sort of lay down, I suppose, an established kind of their place in sort of the European pecking order. Because it does take time quite often. I mean, Man City, when they came into their money, weren't perfect in Europe from day one. In fact, they were a disappointment and couldn't get in the competition for a while, if you remember. So it is a gradual process. I think you kind of, one of them, you feel less starstruck the more you're in it. The fact, though, that Newcastle have gone out and Manchester United have gone out means they're less likely to be in it next season, because, you know, given that English clubs, you know, I think they'd almost assumed that they would get one of those two extra spots in the Champions League through the coefficient for this season. They're in big trouble now because the sort of points, you get points for how far each team goes and for the wins that they get in a competition, but it's averaged out against all the teams in sort of Europe from that season. So, you know, Man City, you know, presumably are going to go on and win, you know, a fair few games, and Liverpool will as well, and Aston Villa, but you're averaging it out with the fact that, you know, Newcastle and Manchester United can't get any more points. So, you know, Newcastle or Manchester United could be kicking themselves if they finish fifth in the Champions League, in the Premier League this season, because their Champions League form might actually stop them getting in the Champions League next year.
Yeah, only themselves to blame. I guess the flip side of that argument, Mark, I reached out to my two Newcastle supporting friends. I'm not sure if that shows that, you know, that the not many Newcastle fans in Norfolk, or the fact I don't have many friends, but one of them was the same as you, like, would have loved to have kicked on in Europe and maybe progressed in the Europa League. The other said, well, actually, now this is a great opportunity to just try and get our Premier League campaign, you know, back. And you said, Mark, probably 2 months ago now, this will catch up with them. Their squad isn't deep enough. And you're right, and they look bare. I mean, it's not all doom and gloom for Newcastle, is it?
No, it's not. No, I think, you know, the squad needs beefing up, but they've been very unlucky with injuries. You know, and the Tonali suspension is one that they couldn't have foreseen, you know, before it happened. And you know, you've got a season-ending ban, you know, just out of the blue. You know, and I suppose maybe there's a question mark over whether there should have been more checks or, you know, into backgrounds or whatever. But I mean, you know, I don't think anybody knew, did they? So that one was really unlucky. You know, Botman's been out for ages. Like Nick Pope goes down and is out for what, 4 or 5 months. I mean, you can't sort of level against that. And Eddie Howe was in a situation where the same 11 players were having to play for 4, 5, 6 matches. And that, I don't think there's any team really that can cope with that. So I'm not surprised. I mean, this is early on in their wealth, and you know, I'm sure that they'll continue to grow. But it's just within that squad, there are still players that were kicking around sort of the wrong end of the table under Steve Bruce. And you need to, you know, as well as say like Lascelles has done since he came back into the team, he's not as good as Botman. And, you know, what's your, you know, you need to have players of that level that can come in and be almost just as good. Like, you know, for Liverpool, if Canati plays or Matic plays, it doesn't really matter, does it? I don't think. And, you know, Man City are obviously able to change a lot. And I think that's where Arsenal are trying to build from a position of strength now, where, you know, they've got their team and sort of the large part of their squad, and then they can go in and kind of get a Declan Rice that kind of just elevates everything to the next level. I suppose somebody like Tottenham have struggled when they've not been able to play their best 11 this season. So Newcastle wouldn't be alone in that. And they, you know, there's still a lot to play for. They've got obviously the Sunderland FA Cup game just around the corner. They're still in the League Cup. They've had an absolutely brutal draw in the League Cup. I mean, having to play, you know, to get past Man City and Man United and then play Chelsea. You know, to that kind of, you know, once they get one trophy, I'm sure, you know, the floodgates will open, because the amount of money they've got, we've seen, you know, with the Saudi backing of, you know, golf and, you know, John Rahm making that switch. It's a limitless pot, but they obviously having to manage financial fair play as well at the moment. But, you know, it, matter of time job before they become Champions League regulars, really. So still a lot to look forward to, I think. For
I thought you were going to sort of suggest John Rahm on the right wing then for Newcastle or something.
Well, I mean, maybe we might have to play in goal if they can. I mean, Dubravka was a doubt, wasn't he, for that game against Milan. But I mean, even down to that Milan game, just one last final thing on it. I mean, they had 8 shots on target. Milan scored with both of their shots on target. I mean, sometimes that can just happen. And, you know, you just have to sort of suck it up and, you know, hope to do better next season.
City and Arsenal progress. We'll talk about them later on in the show, Mark. A quick word on Manchester United. I know they've got a bigger game this weekend, and we'll be previewing that next up in the show. But my goodness, I mean, talk about disappointing. It was far from perfect.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that they finished bottom of their group is sort of less forgivable than what you know, what happened to Newcastle. I mean, you know, despite Manchester United's problems, and you can, you know, Copenhagen have done well, Galatasaray were an interesting team and fun to watch, but, you know, Manchester United should not be finishing bottom of that group. And they really only have themselves to blame, because the defending in the away games was an absolute joke. You can put a little sort of nod in for the amount of injuries that they've had, and that may, I know it's been often said now, isn't it, by some United fans, that, you know, everybody's talking about Tottenham's injuries and Newcastle's injuries and, you know, other teams that have got loads of players out. And like Manchester United just glossed over the fact that there's no Martinez, there's no Casemiro, Shaw's been out for ages, Mason Mount's out. But I think it doesn't, even when they were there, the performances were still bad. So I think that there's a lot more to it. The result against Bayern, losing 1-0, doesn't read that bad, does it? You know, because I think most people have expected Bayern to win the game, but they only have one shot on target in a game they needed to win, and 5 shots in the whole match. And to me, there was I think it was slightly cowardly the way that they played, almost tried to protect themselves from getting humiliated rather than trying to win the game and sort of really throw everything at Bayern. And Bayern had come off a 5-1 defeat at the weekend. They're not amazing defensively. So I think in the grand scheme of things, losing 1-0 to Bayern is not a bad result. But the way that they played, just, I don't know, it didn't feel like how Manchester United should play in a game like that, if that makes sense.
Just finally, before we move on to the Premier League, Mark, having watched the group stages now, has your opinion on the kind of outrights changed at all?
Not overly. I mean, I was sweet at the prices on Paris Saint-Germain. I mean, they need to improve. But I mean, I felt Man City were very strong favourites going into it. And I still think that they are, you know, Bayern, not sure about them defensively. Real Madrid have had a lot of injuries. So it depends, you know, if they can get some of those, you know, Militao, Courtois, etc., back for the sort of business end. But not being, you know, Man City just outplayed them last season. I know Bellingham's there. I don't know if he can completely bridge that gap. So, you know, I think Arsenal, you look at like the Arsenal's potential opponents. I mean, if they avoid the obvious ones there and someone like Paris Saint-Germain, you know, they've beaten City this season, going well in the Premier League. They sort of almost feel maybe more better set up now to kind of play in these big games. So they could be interesting. I mean, Inter lost the plot, to be honest. I mean, quite what Inzaghi was doing, resting Barella and Lautaro for a game that I felt they needed to win. The difference between winning the group and coming second is huge in this season. And for Inter, you know, they're going to be a dangerous team to play in sort of the unseeded teams. But, you know, they had it in their hands to go and win that group against Sociedad, and they didn't. And probably likely to pay the price, I would have thought, in the last 16.
There we go then. That's the Champions League rounded up. Time for the Premier League and a big match to preview first. Members Club is now available on the Racing Post app. All Members Club subscribers can now access premium news and tips anytime, anywhere. Plus, if you're not already a member, you'll get 50% off your first 3 months. If you haven't already subscribed yet and want to join the greatest club in racing, simply visit racingpost.com/subscribe. Liverpool, Manchester United. Doesn't get any easier for Ten Hag, does it? This one, Sunday, 4:30. Liverpool 1-3, 8-1 United, 9-2 the draw. That there are patterns that emerge on this podcast, Mark, and it feels as if at the moment it's discussing Erik Ten Hag. I mean, I saw something last night that I was very fond on as a Norwich fan, the possibility of Ten Hag getting sacked. Could they return with Kieran McKenna?
I mean, I was on the Guardian Football Weekly podcast after the United game, and I referenced the fact that Kieran McKenna, because it was like there was this sort of moment where, you know, United are kind of searching for, I don't know if it's a hero or just somebody to take them forward.
Well, probably an identity as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, something that they can believe in, essentially. Hmm. And, you know, was the answer Kieran McKenna, because he had another great result. He was already at the club, of course. I mean, it's difficult for United to appoint somebody that's not a bigger name. But we've seen time and time again, really, with United, that names, reputations hasn't worked out for them. And so, you know, do they need to find their Arteta, essentially, and back him? But the difference between, say, Arteta, and as a Spurs fan, I'm hoping Ange does this at Tottenham as well. You know, he's got the fans on side. Those type of managers are so narrow-minded and focused on what they want to be and how they're going to achieve it. And, you know, they're not afraid to make difficult calls. And you, if you go back to Arteta, they played half a season without a forward, but it was just one way of getting Aubameyang out of the club because he was seen as sort of, you know, a dodgy one to have in the dressing room. And, like, with Ten Hag, like, has he got that in him to kind of be that narrow-minded? I don't think so. I think he's, you know, he moved away from his principles about two matches into his Manchester United career. And it worked to an extent last season because, of course, they, you know, they won the League Cup. They reached an FA Cup final. They qualified for the Champions League. But I wasn't sure about the solidity of those foundations. The kind of underlying data wasn't amazing, and they've now got themselves into a situation where you mentioned the word identity, like they just haven't got that. And so they'll win games, and while people say they're inconsistent, it's because they'll win games just because of the talent they've got. I mean, there is, you know, if you spend, you know, if everybody's on 300 grand a week or whatever it is, like there will be good players and they will have good moments, but it's flawed because the best teams just have a process and they have a way of playing and they just play like that. And, you know, it can be different. Atletico Madrid do it different to Manchester City and, you know, Arsenal do it differently to Liverpool or whatever. You know, there are different ways of doing it, but you know, like if you watch Liverpool, you know how they're going to play. And they won't always play brilliantly. They won't always win. But you know exactly what you're going to get from them. And with Manchester United, you don't. And that always comes back, I think, to the manager. And that, you know, the losing to Bayern 1-0 is sort of semi-acceptable, I suppose. What happened against Bournemouth had been coming. You know, even when they'd been winning games, you know, against Sheffield United and Burnley, they weren't that great, were they? The Chelsea game obviously got really high XG, but it was a chaotic match that you know, both teams kind of showed their flaws in it. And I just think you can even look at the Everton game. Like Garnacho scores a wonder goal, and it looks like they've won the game easy. But for most of that first half, they were on the back foot at Goodison as well. So they just very rarely seem to be like the dominant team in matches. And it goes like this season goes right back to that opening match where Wolves just kept running through their midfield and they didn't score and they should have had a penalty and, you know, maybe they would have got a result there. But, you know, they just haven't been able to fix that. And you know, he's tried different players, different ways of playing with Bruno deeper and stuff like that. But it's just not working and he's fallen out with players. And the two that he wanted to get rid of, Maguire and McTominay, have probably been two of the better players this season. But the defence is deep. There's space between that defence and midfield and the forward line. Like they just look like a badly coached team at the moment, or one that's maybe, you know, not putting 100% in. I know that's been sort of the accusation against some of the players, wasn't it? After the Newcastle game away from home. I mean, yeah. Just looked like they were jogging until the last 5 minutes. I mean, like, I don't know. There's lack of heart and spirit. I don't want to go all Roy King because, I mean, it's not the only problems. But, you know, if you're lacking heart and spirit and you're also sort of lacking tactical nous and you've got injuries, you know, and suspensions with Fernandes out of this game, like, you know, where is the light at the end of the tunnel? It's just hard to see it. I mean, I was wondering this the other day, Jack. Do you think they would have been better off just sticking by Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, who clearly wasn't amazing tactically, but at least had vibes, I suppose, when he was there.
Vibes. I guess I think when you're a supporter of a football club that isn't particularly, you know, doing as well as you think they can, you just want to see something change, don't you? And often the easiest variable to change is that of the head coach. Now, Manchester United clearly have issues far deeper than that, but I think you just want something to grab onto and something to feel good about.
I threw a question. I was in a pub for far too long yesterday, and like one of the questions I chucked out to the group was, would Unai Emery leave Aston Villa if Manchester United came calling? Most people were like, no way.
Unless the wages triple.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm not sure he's sort of motivated by money. And I mean, it's damning that most people didn't consider it to be that much of a kind of upward step for Emery anyway. And, you know, I think it just goes, you know, Paul Scholes was on TV, wasn't he, before the game saying United's recruitment was so easy in the summer. They just needed to get Declan Rice and Harry Kane. Yeah. As if United, can spend like 200 million, blink of an eye, and plus wages. But, like, you know, are they that big a draw? Like, why would you go to United instead of, like, Arsenal or Bayern Munich?
Look, there's lots of talk about this potentially getting messy for United this weekend. They're a massive price. you know, Liverpool going well, but just looking at their recent fixtures, came from behind to beat Fulham, came from behind to beat Palace, and a 2-0 win against Sheffield United. They're the most three recent Premier League fixtures. I mean, Liverpool clearly in a far better place than United are at the moment, but is this as one-sided as the prices suggest?
I think it probably is, just because, you know, United, like I said, no Maguire, it looks like no Maguire and no Shaw, and Bruno Fernandes is suspended. So you're just wondering kind of what's left. I wasn't impressed with Liverpool against Crystal Palace. I know they got the win, but that wasn't a good performance. You know, from a sort of anti-post standpoint, I'm hoping it was just the fact that they played Sunday, Wednesday, Saturday, which is a tough enough schedule. So hopefully it was that. But, you know, this game at Anfield just looks like a nightmare. I mean, United, they've actually, in the last four games against Liverpool, they've won one of them. The other three finished 7-0, 4-0 and 5-0. So I don't see Liverpool showing any mercy. And I think they'll enjoy kind of going at United and really making it uncomfortable for Ten Hag. And yeah, Liverpool minus one, as you mentioned, their price has been collapsing all week, really, on just about everything pro-Liverpool. Hopefully Liverpool minus one can land.
What price is that, Mark?
It was around about evens when we were putting the graphics together, but it's come in a bit since then and probably will continue to shorten.
Yeah, sorry, Manchester United fans, no hope. Let's go on to the rest of the Premier League fixtures. Friday night football this week, Nottingham Forest against Tottenham, 8 o'clock. Let's take a look at the prices for this one then. Forest 7-2, 3-1 the draw, 7-10 Spurs. You must have been pleased with the last performance, Mark.
Yeah, absolutely. Fully deserved to beat Newcastle. Everything came together. Thought they played exactly the same way against Aston Villa for a large part of that game. Didn't get the second goal. And then, you know, unlucky to lose the game. Even against West Ham when they lost, didn't deserve to lose that one either. So I was always very calm about the kind of bad run in inverted commas because, I can see the bigger picture there. I think Tottenham are improving and actually playing better than when they were winning every game at the start of the season. Kulusevski coming inside has, I think, added a new dynamic to the team. I'm going to give a shout out to our graphics department for the assist front page that we've got for Friday's Racing Post. Of course, the pullout that's in the Racing Post every Friday. We've gone for Forest Slump. And there's a picture of Steve Cooper sat on a bench with his sort of lunch.
Very good.
And kind
very
of
good.
City ground in the background. Obviously a play on Forrest Gump. And somebody that does run Forrest Run is Pedro Porro. And he's 25-1 for the first goal. And I thought that was a fair each way shout. He's got no goals this season, but it's definitely coming. He's had 26 shots, and you consider someone like Kulusevski, who plays much further forwards, had 29. He got three in his last 11 games last season as well, Porro. So he's somebody that definitely knows sort of how to put the ball in the net. And we saw on Sunday, Udogi, you know, getting into a forward position, scoring the first goal for Spurs, from left back. The fullbacks get so high for Tottenham. I'd be surprised if Porro doesn't go in a couple of times before the end of the season. And, you know, Forest are not in great shape at the moment. So a good opportunity for Tottenham and potentially Porro to get on the score sheet.
Oh, looking forward to that. That could get the weekend off to an absolute flyer. Let's take a look at the 3 o'clock games on Saturday there. No early kickoff on Saturday this week. Bournemouth against Luton. The first that we'll preview. Bournemouth 2's on, 7-2 the draw. Luton 5-1. Mark, I keep watching Luton and I keep thinking, you know what? These are a fairly decent outfit, but just keep falling short.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're well coached by Rob Edwards, and that, you know, there's a lot of spirit in the team, and the way that they play is not how most teams play in the Premier League. So, I think that sides are finding it slightly uncomfortable. If you look at kind of how they've done, particularly at home, Noel, and this is obviously an away game, been very competitive in their home matches and, pushed Liverpool, obviously got the point there, but, pushed them close to the win. The Man City game, I don't know, I felt like Man City were always still going to win that game. And even they felt an inevitability about Declan Rice's last gasp goal as well. But they were competitive. I think, if you're looking at it from a handicap point of view, they're a team that probably, you know, one to be on maybe in some of them bigger home games, because they are doing better. This is a different one for them, because away from home is where they've had kind of more of their problems. But I still think in terms of sort of, you know, they've managed to get a couple of, away draws, and they won at Everton. And, you know, they are just scrapping around. I think, you know, they are going to, wouldn't be surprised if they take some hidings along the way, you know, with some of them big away games that they'll have to do in the second half of the season. But given that they sort of stick close to teams more often than not, I'm going to go for Bournemouth to win by one goal. And I am relieved that Bournemouth are doing well, because, you know, that was one of my pre-season shouts. It was looking absolutely terrible that Bournemouth might sort of kick on towards the top half this season. I mean, it's still unlikely, but at least we're talking about that rather than them being in a desperate relegation dogfight. And what a result for them, by the way, at Old Trafford. We always focus on the kind of bigger team when they get hammering. But, you know, from Bournemouth's point of view, Iriola, I think he's starting to weave some of that magic that I was hoping he would from the start.
Absolutely. I have seen some people getting quite clever with Luton in Akers. You know, you've got the Akers freeze option.
For when they score first.
So a few people sort of whacking them in with a few shorties, and both against Arsenal and Manchester City. Score first, freeze Luton and return a nice price. So something to keep an eye on there. Chelsea against Sheffield United. Let's take a look at this one. 2-9 Chelsea, 11-2 the draw, 12-1 Sheffield United. One-way traffic this, Mark?
I don't think you'd be putting that Chelsea in your Akers at 2-9, would you? Look, they should win. I'm going to go for Chelsea to win and over 2.5 goals, which is much more palatable, 8-11. You know, just in terms of Chelsea, that defeat at Everton was their 18th league loss of 2023.
Crazy, isn't it?
Collected just 39 points in the top flight this year. That's absolutely ridiculous, isn't it?
You know, I mean, what's that for points per pound? It must be absolutely astronomical.
It must be. And they are, you know, they're a team to be slightly wary of backing at short prices. But, you know, this is Sheffield United they've got. It is at home. And four of their five wins have also gone over 2.5 goals. So, I don't think I can trust them to keep clean sheets at the moment, but they should have enough firepower to win the game.
Another home side, a very short price. Manchester City, they take on Crystal Palace this weekend. City six is on, 7-1 the draw. Palace 14-1. How do you find an angle into this one?
Yeah, I mean, Palace are actually a team that have caused Man City sort of the odd issue at the Etihad previously, even, you know, taking points or sort of giving them scares at times. I'm going to go for City to win and under 4.5 goals. That sort of game against Luton looked to me like City just, you know, just win any way you can at the moment. You know, there's a doubt over whether Haaland will be fit, so that might limit their goal scoring power. And Crystal Palace, I'm assuming Roy Hodgson will just set them up, you know, to stay in the game for as long as possible. And even if they get sort of one or two down, the idea will be very much to just stay in your shape and not get humiliated, because we've seen them before, actually, even when they've been behind, they try not to go chasing games. So I'd be surprised if they left loads of gaps for City to, you know, run in loads of goals at the end of the game. Not a great betting hit, though, it has to be said.
Absolutely. Newcastle, Fulham, 4-5 Newcastle, 14-5 the draw, 3-1 Fulham. Fulham's recent Premier League form, I text you at the weekend, just going, what is going on? The last four Premier League fixtures, 3-2 win against Wolves, 4-3 defeat to Liverpool, 5-0 against Forest, 5-0 against West Ham. They've found their shooting boots.
16 goals in 4 games. I think I spent the last 15 weeks of this podcast saying they haven't got much up front. So I'm having to sort of eat my words in that regard. What's happened for them? I mean, well, Raul Jimenez has sort of come into some form, hasn't he? And I did wonder whether he had that in him, really, after that serious head injury, taking a long time for him to get back. But, you know, confidence can be a wonderful thing. Tom Cairney looks like he's playing well in midfield, pulling the strings for them. I am sort of slightly amazed by what I've been seeing. I think from this game, though, I am going to go for a Newcastle win. It's quick turnarounds, the biggest concern after what happened against Milan, obviously midweek, and we've gone over that in great detail. But if you have a look at sort of Newcastle at home, they are starting to get a couple of players back. I mean, they've beaten Arsenal, they've beaten Villa, they've beaten Man United, they've beaten Brentford, Chelsea, Palace, Burnley, and Paris Saint-Germain. So this is a team that does a lot of strong work at St. James's. They've been drifting all week for this game. Obviously, Fulham are in good nick and Newcastle are not. But yeah, I'd sort of go against the sort of tide of recent form bias, I think, for this one.
Okay. 5:30 on Saturday, Burnley against Everton. Some narrative in this one. 13-5 Burnley, 12-5 the draw, 11-10 Everton. This will be interesting.
Yeah, the Dyche derby. I mean, Everton are going, obviously, the 10-point deduction sort of from a Premier League table point of view doesn't make for great reading. They're 17th, but they're actually going really well. Would be sort of top half without the deduction. That being said, I'm actually going to go for Burnley draw no bet in this game. I think that Burnley, look, they were bashed by Brighton. I mean, I did the, that was the nap last week, wasn't it? Over 2.5 from both teams to score. And like how the over 2.5 didn't land. Because I mean, the Trafford's had a stormer in goal. Was it the most saves in a Premier League game this season? You know, which I suppose that there'll be some confidence for him because he hasn't been performing to the level. And that there was suggestions that maybe he should have been taken out of the team. But I think Burnley at home have had a really horrible run of fixtures. And when it started to calm down and there have been more winnable games, and this is still one of those, they've actually been a team that, you know, I might look to be with in the second half of the season and sort of draw no bet around about 6-4. Looks a lively price. I mean, obviously, Everton, like I say, began really well. But their expected goals in the wins away to Forest and West Ham was only 0.7 and 0.8. So they are, I think, still a team that's vulnerable to kind of, at the price that they are, to want to back them because I'm just not sure if they'll score enough goals.
Okay, let's have a look at the Sunday action then. Three more games to preview this week. Arsenal-Brighton will be our first, 2 o'clock. Arsenal 4-9, 4-1 the draw. Brighton 5-1. You mentioned Arsenal in terms of, you know, they found their style. They've got their man going well in the Champions League, going well in the Premier League. Is this another one that they can tick off?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I can't believe this game is not on TV.
Like the Sunday selections have been strange, haven't they, this season? There's been some really weird ones.
Watching West Ham again at 2 o'clock against Wolves rather than Arsenal against Brighton. But there we go. I'm going to go for both teams to score an over 2.5 goals in this one. Odds against. I mean, both teams to score has landed in every Brighton game this season. And if you that Burnley game that I referenced earlier, I mean, that 29 shots, 11 on target, didn't beat Burnley. You just know that, yeah, that's the way that they play. And they won't change just because it's at the Emirates. And in terms of Arsenal at home, 6 of those 8 Premier League games saw both teams scoring over 2.5 goals. And, you know, I don't think there's going to probably be a team as attack-minded as Brighton going to the Emirates, you know, this season. They're not going to change for anybody.
Okay, Brentford against Aston Villa, 11-5. Brentford, 11-4. The draw, 11-10. Villa, lots of 11s in there. Villa going really well, Mark, and probably, you know, 11-10, a price that a lot of people will look at and go, yeah, I'll have a bit of that.
Yeah, not for me. If you have a look at Villa's away games sort of recently, they drew at Wolves when maybe they were expected to do better, and Bournemouth when they were expected to do better and they nearly lost that game, needed a late goal, and they lost at Nottingham Forest as well. So there's been a jump in their home and away form that, you know, if they're to kind of finish in the top four, they probably will need to sort of arrest that slide at some point. Even the Spurs game, didn't think they deserved to win that one either. And Brentford, plenty of pace, be looking to sort of exploit that high line. I just think that, yeah, the draw sort of stood out to me here as a game that I don't think that would be a bad result for either team. One just little interesting bit from this game. on expected goal difference, Brentford are actually performing better than Aston Villa this season, according to the Opta stats. Did you know that?
I didn't know that. I do now. That's a, that is an interesting little nugget. You've done your research, Mark.
Yeah, yeah, thank you.
Good stuff. Final Premier League game we'll be previewing this week. West Ham Wolves, 23-20 West Ham, 5-2 the draw, 23-10 Wolves.
Yeah, I mean, having slagged off the game, Jack, sorry, did I cut you off there? I mean, having slagged off this game, I was just getting excited because, you know, I actually think it might be better than what it looks like on paper. still wouldn't be my choice of the 2 o'clock options. And, you know, those that do get more choice, I'm sure we'll be watching Arsenal v Brighton. Next season, we'll be able to watch that all legally, won't we? The games that are not at 3 o'clock on a Saturday are going to be on, so we'll have our choice. But I'm going to go for both teams to score. Wolves have scored in every game since that Premier League opener at United when they did everything but score. And actually, Brighton are the only team above both of these in the both teams to score sort of frequency table. 13 of 16 for West Ham and Wolves, both teams have scored. So throw that all together and I think you've got a bet there at 8-11, albeit that, you know, it's not one that jumps out on the page as a must watch. It might turn out to be better than what I was suggesting sort of a few minutes ago.
Mark, great stuff. I hope you've all jotted that down on your paper at home. It's time to jump into the EFL with Dan Childs. If you want some free football bets this season, we've got you covered. Simply head to racingpost.com/freebets. And there you'll find over £200 worth of them for you to use this season. That's racingpost.com/freebets. It's always difficult to keep up with the EFL this time of year. So many games. Let's try and get the sense from Dan Childs to work it all out then, Dan. We'll start with your team in focus. I mean, League One is so brilliantly poised at the moment. I know Pompey kind of not running away with it, but they've created a little bit of a gap after a big win earlier this week. But the teams in behind them, goodness me, it's competitive. We're going to be taking a look at Peterborough today, aren't we?
Yeah, I mean, it's getting a little bit similar to last season, isn't it? When there was sort of three or four teams, Barnsley included, that kind of got away, didn't they, from the rest of the league. And I think this is the same sort of thing could happen this season. Peterborough, one of those teams. Portsmouth, as you say, that have got that gap in there, and Derby and Bolton are going well as well. But Peterborough, for me, looking at the betting, I mean, they're 7-1 to, you know, to win the title. And I've just mentioned it's really a four-horse race in my view. And that looks at a big price to me. I don't see anyone playing any better football than Peterborough at the moment in League One. I mean, they're the top scorers in the division with 40 goals. Their goal difference, plus 20, is the best in the division. They're sitting in a decent place, 7 points off the top at the moment, 1 point off of second place. And they're only going to get better. I think he's got a young side there, Darren Ferguson, players that are improving all the time. In the front four, you go for Ricky J. Jones, who's now playing as a centre-forward, taken over from Johnson Clark-Harris, who didn't get his deadline day move to Bristol Rovers, but he's kind of been made more of a fringe player. Now, he got 26 goals last season, Clark-Harris, but the fact that they've moved him to a bench player and they still look more dangerous is incredible, really. And the key is those three players in behind. You've got Joel Randall, Kwame Poku and Ephraim Mason-Clark. I mean, Mason-Clark, I think, is probably one of the best attacking players that there is outside of the top two divisions. And the only fear I would have for Peterborough is what happens in January if somebody comes in for him, because he's a fantastic player. But at the moment, with what they've got, you know, like I say, they're a young side, exciting football, scoring lots of goals, improving all the time. If they kept that together, I would say every chance of them, even winning the title.
7-1, halfway through the season. A little poke from Dan Charles. Love the sound of that, Dan. Three selections then for this weekend's action. Who are we starting with?
Yeah, we'll stick with League One. I'm going to go with Wigan, draw no bet, away to Port Vale. It surprises me what price they are, Wigan. 11-8 they are on the draw no bet. I mean, without their 8-point deduction, they'd actually be in ninth place. Port Vale in 17th at the moment. I don't think we're going to fare him very well on the shot stats. I think that's feeding into the prices. But the way that Sean Maloney's side play, they kind of sit quite deep in a lot of their games and counter-attack. And it means that although they're not having lots of shots, the quality of those chances are often like one-on-ones. So they're scoring lots of them. So I do think that even though their overall shot stats are quite low, they're probably going to continue to do quite well and pick up points. Whether they're going to do enough, I mean, I can't see them going down. They've got rid of this deduction and got into a 14th place at the moment. Whether they can push even further and go for the playoffs, you know, who knows? They've had one defeat in the last nine games, so they're certainly on a decent run at the moment. Port Vale, they went 11 games, league games, without a win until last week when I put them up, didn't I, to win away to Exeter. They got that, nicked that 1-0 win. They've then had an FA Cup game replay in the week against Stevenage. That was 3-3, went to penalties, they lost. So they're playing lots and lots of games, going to be a bit leggy. They've also got next week, they've got a massive EFL Cup quarter final at home to Middlesbrough to think about. So I worry about them, whether their minds are going to be fully on this match, and certainly fatigue-wise, with the legs. So Wigan, for me, not a team you want to be playing, you know, in that state. So Wigan on the draw, no bet, looks a great price to me.
Yeah, can't argue with that. Wigan, draw, no bet, first up. Two more to go. Who's next?
Yeah, dropping to League Two now. Going to go with the seventh place Wimbledon to win away to Salford. A bit of odds against still around for this at the moment. That looks great price to me. They've had three wins in the last four league games, Johnny Jackson's side. They were 4-0 winners at home to Swindon last weekend. All season they played this sort of 4-4-2 formation with pace on both flanks. Got a great centre-forward up top as well, Ali Alhamadi, the Iraqi international, who's getting better all the time, probably one of the best strikers in League Two. And then they're going up against Salford, who they've had shocking luck with injuries really this season. Salford constantly got about 10 players over the last month or so injured. Their game was postponed last weekend. You'd have to wait and see whether any of these guys have come back or not. But there are so many players out at the moment. They did dig in and got a 0-0 away to Stockport a fortnight ago, but it was really just a defensive rearguard action. They've gone six games without a victory. And the way that Wimbledon are playing at the moment, I think, you know, those odds, shade of odds against to win at Salford looks a good bet to me.
OK, two strong selections so far, Dan. The third and final, who is it?
I'm going to go with a stick in League Two. Going to go with Grimsby, draw no bet, probably a shade of odds on away to Newport. I mean, Grimsby, we put them up last week, didn't we, at home to Crewe. They got the job done, 1-2-1, deserved victory. I mentioned last week that they're improving under David Artell. They got a 1-1 draw at MK Dons, who have been going quite well. Then they got that 2-1 win at home to Crewe. Artell's a manager I like. He did a really good job when he was with Crewe, got them promoted out of League Two. Grimsby, I think, they were falling narrowly on the wrong side of results earlier this season under Paul Hurst. They're not a bad side, probably in a bit of a false position down in 19th. And the way that they're improving now, going to Newport, who have got a bit of a small squad, again, a lot of injuries, you know, played another game in the week, got a 4-1 win in an FA Cup replay away to Barnet, which is a great result for them. But they don't seem to be consistent. They often win one, lose one. So I would kind of worry about them at the end of a busy week. So Grimsby, as I say, on the up under Artell, to win this game down in South Wales.
Okay, so Wigan draw no bet, Wimbledon and Grimsby draw no bet, the selections this week. Dan, thank you very much.
You're welcome, Jack.
Yeah, time for Mark's best bets then for this week. The prop shop landed last week. Hopefully we can follow him with some more winners this time around. We'll start with a bet builder, shall we, Mark?
Yeah, so the bet builder is going to come at Turf Moor, Burnley against Everton. I'm going to go for Amdouni to have a shot on target. Averages more than one shot on target per 90 minutes this season. So somebody that definitely likes to, you know, he's sort of shot volume frequency is high. I'm going to go for the former Burnley player Tarkowski to have a shot. He's had a shot in six of his last eight games, and that includes Burnley in the League Cup. And then over 10 corners, Burnley's corners are averaging over 11 this season. They do play with quite a bit of adventure. They're not very good at defending set pieces. So that might be a concern for them in this game, because we know that Sean Dyche does focus very much on corners and free kicks. And if I was to sort of pick out just one of those, it would probably be Tarkowski to have a shot in the game. But yeah, that bet builder comes in around about 5-1.
Like the sound of that. Right, time for a treble and a best bet. We got the treble up in a slightly different way last week. It was a double because of a postponement, but they all count, Mark. They all count. Let's try and find a treble this week where there won't be any postponements.
I'm hoping it's going to be a Sunday fun day in the Premier League. I'm going for both teams to score treble in sort of the three games at 2 o'clock. So Arsenal against Brighton. Brighton have had both teams to score in every game so far this season. Brentford against Villa. I think Brentford might be able to exploit that high line that Villa played. But obviously going forward, Villa have been top notch for most of the campaign. And then finally, West Ham against Wolves. West Ham and Wolves have both had both teams to score. That's a bit of a mouthful. In 13 of their 16 Premier League games. So I think the stats are in our favour for that one.
Goals galore on Sunday then. We'll finish things off this week, Mark, with your best bet.
Yeah, so just repeating myself a little bit here, but I'm going to go for Arsenal against Brighton, both teams to score. So the last time Brighton had a Premier League game where sort of the no landed in both teams to score was May the 14th. So in the last 20 games in the league, both teams have scored. That game, actually, where it didn't, was at the Emirates. So hopefully history doesn't repeat itself. But on that occasion, it was because Brighton kept a clean sheet and won 3-0. So they are a side that, they don't really care much for reputations. They'll play on the front foot. Really looking forward to sort of the game. I think it should be a belter. The last time Brighton didn't score in the Premier League, Jack, do you want to know?
Last time they didn't score. It's been a while, hasn't it?
February the 18th was the last time they failed to score in a Premier League game in a 1-0 defeat against Fulham when they did everything but score. So, yeah, both teams to score. Obviously, Arsenal were great going forward, and you'd expect sort of their front players to hurt the way that sort of hurt Brighton at some point. So, it's more about can Brighton get on the score sheet. And, yeah, I fancy them to do that probably in defeat at the Emirates.
Certainly exciting watching Brighton, isn't it? Right, there we go. That's everything wrapped up for this week then. What's your plans, Mark? Because Spurs are playing Friday. And whenever Norwich play on a Friday night, it doesn't happen too often. My weekend feels really empty after that.
I think that's fair. It's sort of Saturday. I don't ever like to say that I'm looking after the kids because as a dad, like that, it's just part of your job, isn't it? Oh, I'm babysitting. The wife's out on one of her many Christmas do's on Saturday. So I'll sit down and watch the Strictly Come Dancing final with my daughter. He's very excited about that. I'll probably need to have a bet to.
I was gonna say, have you got an angle in there?
I haven't yet. Ask me again at sort of 6:30 on Saturday, and I might have one. And then Sunday, that will be very much. Going to do a seafood platter dry rum for Christmas.
Are you responsible for that?
I am. I wouldn't let anyone else. Wouldn't let anyone else near it. To be honest, I'm very particular about the seafood. I'm going to do a dry run, make sure we've got the right stuff, get the order in and stuff like that. How about you? Who've Norwich got?
Whoa.
I know. I don't. It's, I know exactly who you've got.
I think we're both in the office together next week, aren't we? And we had a little bet, a side bet at the start of the season. Whoever would finish highest has to buy the other lunch. You went with Ipswich, I went with Norwich, and I think I might as well just cash out early. I cash out for like a Pret or something on Wednesday.
Yeah, maybe two courses instead of three.
It's not going well. You never know. Norwich have hit a bit of form going at the right time. I'm going to be watching behind the sofa, I think. That's another week of Bets Club Sorted. If you're following Mark or Dan in with their selections, please remember to do so responsibly. We will be back next week for another episode of Bets Club. Until then, stay safe. Bye-bye, everyone.